So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Hello, wrestling fans. I'm Diamond Donovan Douglas, better known as 3D.
And I'm Handsome Harley with Stella. But to my friends, including you, 3D, you guys can call me Guido.
Well, I hope you like blood. I hope you like guts. I hope you like wrestling, because we've got the best for you right here. Let's talk about our main event.
Let's talk about it.
Cactus Set, survivor of the death tournament, squaring off against 67-year-old Drunk Terry Funk. You know what I'm ready to do? I'm ready to get to the action.
Let's go right now to the action and wrestle.
Hey everybody, John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting, another edition of Review Away, joined by Wei. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing pretty good. Not bad. Not too bad. Good.
I feel a bit of pressure this week. I think we got a lot of praise for our Beyond the Mat review, including from Barry Blaustein.
Seriously?
Yeah, he listened to the whole show.
What did he say?
Said, I loved your analysis of the film.
That's wonderful.
Said it brought back a lot of great memories for him.
That's
going
really
back
cool.
And listening. So a big thank you to Barry Blaustein, not just for joining us, but also for listening back.
Do you think he'll be listening again this week?
To Stranglemania? Probably not. But yeah, we got feedback from both Barry Blaustein and Roland Alexander this past week.
That is right.
As we chatted about on Review and Impact.
Yes. Yes, we did chat about that on Review and Impact.
Wait a minute. Do you want to read the Roland thing on this show or on Impact?
Why don't we read it on this show?
Okay.
Pick up.
So not only did Barry Blaustein provide us feedback, but later in the show today, Wei, we're going to hear feedback from Roland Alexander, who you chatted with this week on Review of Raw, and we're going to get some of his thoughts on Beyond the Mat and the process.
Some additional
content, an Easter egg here on Review Away.
He posted on John Pollock's Facebook this past week after hearing the interview, just thanking us, and also mentioned that he left something out in the interview that he wanted to share. So we will
stay tuned, everybody.
Yes.
Stay tuned. Don't go to my Facebook wall yet. But this week we're chatting about Stranglemania, which is very much a cult video amongst wrestling fans and tape traders. Came out in 1997 by the Insane Clown Posse, Violent J, and Shaggy 2-Dope. And we're going to be joined later in the program by Violent J, and he's going to chat about Juggalo Championship Wrestling, the genesis of Stranglemania, and kind of some notes on putting that whole video together. Because that was really the project that exposed wrestling fans to ICP.
Absolutely. And I feel like, covering pro wrestling, we hear everything about, Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, all these companies. But we... Juggalo Championship Wrestling has been a company that's been around for 10 years that, kind of flies under the radar for whatever reason. And, we'll hear Violent J talk all about it.
That we will. But first up, we are going to be chatting about Stranglemania. And, most weeks, Wei, I very much look forward to when we record these shows and getting to chat about events. Watching this event, I had no clue how we were going to review this.
Oh, yeah. I felt the same way.
Do we talk about the commentary? Do we talk about the matches? So I think we're going to have a little combination of both.
Yeah. We'll just see what happens. We really have no idea what's going on.
Stranglemania, everybody, featuring matches from the IWA King of the Death match and some other IWA matches, not all part of that Deathmatch tournament.
These were really just matches that I think that,
were on a compilation video.
Yeah, I think the compilation is called Outrageously Violent Wrestling from Japan.
What a title.
Yes, somehow ICP got their hands on this tape, and as you'll hear Violent J talk about it, they were basically lying around on the couch, doing commentary to the show to their friends, and they just all decided to record it. And this is the product that came out of it.
We start the video off with the ICP warning, which I meant to go back and transcribe, but I did not. But it was basically saying, don't steal our shit. We'll kill you, which was the irony of all ironies to start off this show. Uh-huh. I think that was irony, wasn't it? A copyright warning at the beginning of a copyright infringed video.
Yeah, I would say so.
Then we get an ad for ICP's new CD on Riddlebox with their title track, Chicken Hunting.
Okay. Yeah.
And then cool. We get a montage of deathmatch footage from Japan. And then we go to the green screen, which is accompanied by Diamond Donovan Douglas and Handsome Harvey, better known as 3D and Guido. And they run down the matches on the show. They announce the main event of Cactus Sack and Drunk Terry Flunk, as well as a $25 battle royal that we will see.
Yes, a $25 SWF battle royal featuring such names as Hazel, Spark, and Larry.
And Skinny Wolf.
Yes.
And the highlight being the greatest interview I've ever seen in wrestling history.
Oh, man, yeah.
Our first matchup, it was Cactus Jack and Shoji Nakamaki, but in this, it was Cactus Sack and his new incarnation, Lava Nama Nui.
No, Lama Nama Numi.
Numi?
Yeah.
I wrote it down wrong then. Do you think they just made these names up on the fly?
I think they made up some of the names beforehand. And
Lama Nama Numi.
Yes. Why? I have no idea. But
I enjoy how I wrote this as Lama Nama Nui, and then throughout my notes got it correct later as Lama Nama.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this is going to be something else, folks.
Yeah, I have no idea what we're going to do.
I wrote this down as I did a normal match.
Yeah, okay.
So if you want to add stuff, the premise of this, everybody, is that 3D and Guido, better known as the ICP, just provided commentary, which, way you asked in the interview if this was scripted ahead of time or planned out, there was no fucking way this was planned out ahead of time.
No, absolutely
no
not.
No way.
Well, that was part of the fun of it, the spontaneity of you know, putting a tape in and just pretending like you know what's going on.
This is the kind of video that I think if you watch this in 1997, you would think this was the greatest thing in history.
Mm-hmm.
And watching it in 2011, I don't know if you'd have that same reaction to it because you've seen so much.
A lot of this type of stuff has happened since then. We'll get to a bit of it in the interview. You know, things like Mystery Science Theater or Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, taking old footage and making comedic commentary over it. But back then, back in the mid-90s, this was a pretty foreign new concept, at least with pro wrestling.
Literally a foreign concept.
Yeah.
Cactus Jack starts off with a bed of nails, and we get a background story about his father, Prickly Balls. This is where our careers have descended to, way. Cactus Sack and his father, Prickly Balls.
Oh.
Very slow start between the two, featuring a kick in the corner by Jack, and the announcers say they don't want to see any no scientific shit. It leads to a baseball slide into a barbed wire board. Then an Irish whip sends Jack into a barbed wire board, and then Jack brings out the bed of nails, way. And they send the board to Lama Nama, and Jack wraps the barbed wire around his head. I go back and forth between their gimmick names and real names, so I apologize. I just feel weird calling him Sack. Then we see Jack drive his head into the bed, drives the head of Lama Nama Nui into the bed of nails. This looked extremely gruesome, way, with the bed of nails.
Uh-huh.
I should preface this. I hate death matches. Just hate them.
Do you?
It's shitty wrestling and just guys murdering themselves with objects that are sharp.
But let's talk a little bit about just death matches. This was a craze in Japan, wasn't it? For a period of time, this was actually a recognized style of wrestling that was very popular.
It was. I'm sure. I'm not denying there was an audience for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had a friend of mine in elementary school, and we went to high school together. and we found out about ordering tapes online. And I ordered the J Cup, and he ordered the King of the Death match from 95. And right there, I realized the differences between the two of us.
And there's always an audience for this type of stuff.
But I'll say, I came over to his house, and we watched the King of the Death match together. And by the end of it, I questioned why I follow this weird industry. And, like, is this pro wrestling? I feel like I just watched something illegal that I shouldn't have watched. Anyway, Jack puts the bed of nails on top. I hate calling him Lama Nama. Should I just call him Nakamaki?
Whatever you want.
Then we see a flying elbow. Both guys are very bloody at this point. Jack lands on the barbed wire board. His arm is all tied up. Then Nakamaki misses Jack on the board. They point out to Nakamaki's Jordache chick jeans that he is wearing. He was wearing like a white like shirt with jeans.
Mm-hmm.
Very,
baggy
very
jeans.
Basic look. And then we see Nakamaki with a DDT. Jack kicks out. Jack comes back with his own DDT onto the barbed wire board, and Cactus Jack gets the win.
Yep.
Quite the match.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Nakamaki tosses his shirt to the crowd, and the announcers are... I did find it enjoying... I found it entertaining when they would dub over their English on top of the Japanese guys cutting like big promos after these death matches. I would be so pissed if I was like a talent watching this. A, knowing I didn't get a penny for this video, and they're just mocking the shit out of me.
Yes, yes. Lama Namanumi says cuts a promo after his grueling death match, and ICP translates it saying, he tosses his shirt, and ICP says his promo is saying, if you want my shirt, I want a cut of the fucking money.
I'm sure he wanted a cut of this video, too. I wish you spoke Japanese, and you could, like, tell us what he really said.
I wish you spoke Japanese. Why did you wish that I spoke it? What do I have to do with the Japanese? I'm Chinese, John.
I'm just saying, because I don't know Japanese.
So why would
maybe you know Japanese?
Why wouldn't you say I wish I spoke Japanese like you? Why wouldn't you wish yourself to speak Japanese? Why are you looking at me?
Because it's much more of a stretch for me to speak Japanese than you.
You are a racist.
I'm not, Wei. I'm really not. I'm just logical. They air Jack's promo backstage. It was just so weird hearing Cactus Jack cut this like emotional, serious promo that he did numerous times after his matches. And it's just like a comedy setting.
Yeah.
And he's cutting real promos.
Yes. But I find it weird anyway for Cactus Jack to be cutting any type of promo to a Japanese television audience, knowing that probably 90% of the audience watching this have no idea what he's saying.
Oh, he knew the tape would get back to the U.S.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. These were big sellers at the time.
In this form.
Oh, yeah. VHS.
With commentary.
Oh, well, not with these guys. Not in this form. Then we go to the first of many cutaways to the $25 Battle Royal from California. It featured Big Larry, who was a heavy Japanese wrestler. Think Takeshi Morishima, but in 97. Malicious Mike. Hazel Spark in the black panties, as they described.
They make up all these names on the spot,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, Richie Surfboy, Masked Mauler, and then we cut away. We just kind of got introduced to everyone, and then they cut away.
Well, this was just some random footage where ICP commentate and make up names.
Then we went to a glass match between the Mushroom Boys, Ponderosa, and I could have sworn they called him Sweet Mouth at the beginning.
No.
But then it became Sweetenhouse.
Sweetenhouse.
Sweetenhouse. I wrote down Sweeten. Like Sweetener.
Get it right. The Mushroom Boys. Ponderosa and Sweetenhouse.
Sweetenhouse. Sweet Mouth. It was actually the Headhunters here. Two, like, 480-pound brothers having a ridiculous hardcore match with one another featuring glass.
But two of the the most aerial, fat, pudgy fucks I've ever seen in my life, Guido.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you, you can take a skinny guy like the Skinny Wolf, and that motherfucker can't even jump off the top rope. But you take one of these big, fat slops of fuck, and they do three fucking flips off the top rope and land their fat ass on their opponent. One, two, three, pen.
Yes.
This was fucked. Basically, we have two heavy guys, and they just run at each other with their weight, fighting into the ropes as ICP just tears these two guys apart for how fat they are. Mm-hmm. Giant tubs of lard.
Yeah, they're very fat.
And it ends with...
we can get into some of the spots here.
They
cut each other open. One of them sits on the bleachers as they brawl into the crowd.
See, I saw Swedenhouse deliver a clothesline to Ponderosa over the top, and I thought that was the most athletic thing they were going to do. And they actually built to their high spots.
They actually did a lot of stuff that you wouldn't expect a Ponderosa to do.
I was shocked. I was actually shocked here.
Okay.
Glass shit was just disgusting. Yeah. Like, they were taking these shards of glass and slicing their foreheads open.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very graphic. We see Ponderosa deliver a body slam and then a top rope splash for a two count. So each time I was amazed these guys are pulling this off. I thought one guy was going to fall off the top and die. Then Swedenhouse makes the comeback, hits a tope con hilo over the top rope, which is identified as a moonsault by the announcers. And then he gets the glass, shoves it or slices it into the head of Ponderosa. And then he starts breaking multiple shards of glass over Ponderosa's forehead. And Ponderosa continues to kick out here. Then we saw a top rope guillotine leg drop by Swedenhouse for another kick out. Then a top rope elbow drop for a two. A scoop slam onto the barbed wire board. And then he sandwiches Ponderosa in between two boards with barbed wire. And then jumps off the top with an actual moonsault. Identified as holy fuck, and Ponderosa again kicks out, and then it led to Ponderosa's comeback, where he hits Swedenhouse with a vertical suplex onto a bed of glass. See a body slam, splash from the top, and Ponderosa gets the win after the top rope splash.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you tell us about the post match way involving the other Japanese talent, some of the young boys getting involved.
Okay, so here we have Lama Namanumi surrounding the ring, trying to help Ponderosa, and Deadly Fred and Lama Namanumi. Deadly Fred, Deadly Fred is Lama.
I feel this is a new low for us, Wei.
Deadly Fred is Lama Namanumi's tag team partner, and Ponderosa here, you would assume had just turned babyface in this feud against Swedenhouse, but in the post match, Ponderosa swerves Lama Namanumi and attacks him, and Swedenhouse goes out of the ring to grab a drink instead he blows fire at he blew fire at the crowd, and then the Mushroom Boys reunite and they throw Deadly Fred into the broken glass.
This was like TNA booking here at the end, where these guys just murdered each other, and then they joined. What a swerve.
Yeah.
A swerve in a glass match.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's clear that at least Violent J is a wrestling fan, because he knows all the pro wrestling announcer cliches.
These were really good, I thought.
Yeah, he knows the voice. He does it every well.
There's 200,000 people here.
Yeah.
You just jumped two stories.
And it is actually, it's really funny. It's very funny. But they, I guess this is part of the appeal too. They only have one speed, okay? They're on a 10 for like the entire 2 hours of this tape.
Hey, man, give them credit for maintaining this energy for an hour and a half.
I have to assume that they might have taken a break or two, but if they didn't, yeah, all the more credit. But because it's so loud and so just in your face for the entire 2 hours with every with fuck being every other word, you just start tuning out. And in fact, it just gets a little boring when you're watching this whole thing in one sitting. My first exposure to this tape was just with the Cactus Jack Terry Funk match, and I thought it was hilarious just watching that one match alone with this really weird and strange commentary that I'd never heard before. But to sit through an entire 2 hour tape, it's a little difficult.
It would be like you getting into my car and
yeah.
I'm driving down Dundas and I hit 120.
Yeah.
You'd be like, fuck, Pollock, what are you doing?
I thought.
But if we were on the highway, it's just regular speed.
Well, I thought you were going to say if I got into your car and I started screaming in your ear for 2 hours.
Oh, that would be annoying no matter where we were. But there, that would be an analogy. And notice how I said I'd be the bad driver.
Okay, thanks. You're redeemed.
So then we go, we get a promo from the Headhunters backstage, as they're all bloody. They're back together, they confirm to us. Then we go back to the Battle Royal, which was quickly becoming my favorite part of this tape. Big Larry just jumps over the top to eliminate himself, and then Malicious Mike follows him.
Yeah. What's funny here is that the ICP tried to remember the names that they just made up in the previous segment.
We got a new entrant, Nate the Snake.
And they make up backstories for these guys. Like, there's this long-haired dude named Hazel. They call Hazel Spark. And they say that he's a big fan of heavy metal music.
That's great. Oh, next up, we've got the return of Lama Nama Numi, Shoji Nakamaki, against Deadly Fred, whose real name was Hiroshi Ono.
Okay.
So,
tag team partners.
They prefaced this match by saying, this is one of the greatest matches ever.
Yes.
High praise to start.
Yep.
Lama Nama is very bloody early on. I found this so annoying because both were wearing white shirts with jeans. Thankfully, they were wearing different boots. Deadly Fred had black boots and Lama Nama Numi had white boots. Maybe it designated heels and baby faces. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that was the only way I could tell these two apart.
I actually couldn't tell them apart.
And, oh, and this was a thumbtack match, way.
Yes. Was this one of the King of the Death match?
I don't think so.
No.
We see an STF by Deadly Fred. Both were bleeding relatively early. Even harder to decipher the two.
Oh, slid him. The shit out of him.
That's real.
Ooh. Oh, God. He was like, fuck you, motherfucker.
He was like, you slap me, you son of a bitch.
Boom. Oh. He lays it on the big coconut crunch.
Fred ends up taking a bump into the thumbtacks, kicks out at two, then takes a power bomb onto the thumbtacks, another two count. Then he takes the stroke onto the thumbtacks. There's thumbtacks going into the back of Fred's head.
Yeah.
And Lama Nama Numi gets the win the two partners. This was an incredibly violent
this
match.
This was insane. Like, these bumps were like nothing I've ever seen.
This was gross. Like, they were all in the back of his head, on his arm. Like, disgusting.
We're talking like they did a whole finish for a regular match, but every big move was landing on the thumbtacks. So you had like four thumbtack spots here with big moves. We're talking like power bombs and suplexes. So, insanity. At the end here, Deadly Fred rips his shirt off, ripping the tacks off at the same time.
Oh, this was so gross.
Yeah. And then backstage, Deadly Fred bows to Lama.
Zoomed in on his arm.
To Lama Nama Numi. And then
they're back together.
ICP translates it. They're saying that Deadly Fred said, you beat the shit out of me. Now go ahead. You can have your way with me. As Deadly Fred bows.
Oh, then this random video starts airing, and it's a promo for the ICP, and the announcers are playing up, what's going on here? Get this off! What's going on? Then we get a Cactus Jack promo that he cuts on Nakamaki, and says that he and Leatherface are going to beat them up. And then Leatherface comes in. You find this a little striking?
Leather neck,
yes. Leather neck, dressed in a white dress shirt with a black tie, a flesh-colored mask,
mm-hmm.
and crazy dark curly hair.
That's true. I'd never put that together.
Neither did I, but that really was the Leatherface look.
Huh. Interesting.
Very interesting. And that leads to Lama Nama Numi and Deadly Fred, who are their reunion match, against Cactus Jack and Leatherface / Leatherneck. And it's a barbed wire thumbtack match. And they go fight in the crowd at the start, and
Leatherface just runs out with his chainsaw running through the crowd with the sparks coming out.
Great gimmick.
He's actually, yeah, really awesome.
And they talk about Leatherface comparing him to a bench and then to a woman.
Yeah. And then they address the rumor that Leatherneck is actually a woman underneath the mask.
This was drama building. Jack and Leatherface eventually start fighting each other on the floor. Jack takes a vertical suplex onto the board from Lama Nama Numi. Then Numi takes an Irish whip into the barbed wire, which have replaced the ropes, and then takes a clothesline over the top of the barbed wire by Jack. Incredibly painful. Jack wraps the barbed wire around his arm and takes out Lama Nama Nui, and then hits a flying elbow off the apron. Then Jack drops Numi neck first onto the barbed wire. They double team and drop him on top of barbed wire ropes. Then Numi attempts a comeback, takes a chair to the knee by Jack, and they work over the knee, and he applies what they called the figure six onto Numi as Leatherface splashes him for a pin attempt while he's still in the submission. So how does Leatherface heighten this violent barbed wire thumbtack match? A rear chin lock.
I thought it was a dragon sleeper.
Looked like a rear chin lock. He had an
inverted face lock.
Maybe we saw different spots here.
This was a figure four plus the other move.
This
right?
was a submission after he had let go of the figure six.
Oh, okay.
Then we see a spike powerbomb to Lama Nama Numi and landed, like, it was slow, but onto, like, the back of his neck. It looked really ugly. And as then we see Cactus Jack lift up this board, and he goes towards Fred, who's on the floor outside of the ring, and Violent J is just yelling, pull my leg, you bitch! And then Fred finally pulls his leg and drops the board onto Jack's head. I found it amusing.
It was amusing. Yes.
And the announcers are railing on Deadly Fred for not being part of this match. He's just on the outside for the whole thing. And then
they keep calling him a puss and a bitch, Deadly Fred.
And then Leatherface, he chops Deadly Fred, who falls onto the thumbtacks. We see a fireball to the face of Leatherface, and Lama Nama Numi gets the pin. So Lama Nama Numi and Deadly Fred get the victory over Cactus Jack and Leatherface.
I don't know if this stuff, this tape should be reviewed as wrestling, like we review the other shows.
How would you review it then?
I don't know.
I have no clue how to review this.
I have no
clue.
It's
so weird. It's so different.
I don't know. We're almost at the end. We'll just finish it.
If you're a new listener, everyone, what a week to start.
Yes.
We're down to three at the Battle Royal. It's Surfer Boy Richie, Skinny Wolf, and the Masked Mauler. And then Wolf's eliminated. There's a shitty powerbomb attempt by Wolf, and the Masked Mauler gets the victory. But that's not the highlight. The highlight was the interview afterwards where, I just have to play this.
You sure came out on top in that one. Excellent.
The winds of fortune were with me, my friend.
The winds of fortune.
And the fire that burns in my heart.
Fire in your heart. Uh-huh. Oh, you come from Sonora, Mexico.
Yes, my friend.
And you wear a mask.
That I do, David. That I do.
What the fuck is that? Get that shit out of here!
So he informs them, the winds of change led me to victory. And this interviewer had such gems of questions as, you sure won! Then the follow-up was, you're from Mexico, and you wear a mask. Yes, I do.
This was something else. They found a great clip to toss in here.
Best 30 seconds of the entire video was this interview. I loved it. Because this was done as a serious backstage interview.
From the SWF, the Stale Whack Fudgy Federation.
And that takes us to the main event way. Cactus Sack and Drunk Terry Flunk, the finals of the IWA King of the Death match. And this, to me, early on, Funk is delivering his punches, and this is the first time I've ever heard someone criticize Terry Funk's work punches, as ICP did here. Mm-hmm. Funk is always regarded as having the best work punch in the business. And they mentioned Funk, he practices boxing animals, including horses, and that brought me back to remember that match he had with Chris Candido on Thunder, where he got kicked in the head by a horse.
Oh, wow.
A Thunder we should review.
Okay.
Then we see a set of punches, which leads to Funk taking a back bump onto the exploding barbed wire. What did they call this match? An exploding barbed wire death match?
Exploding ring death match. And these were boards with C4, allegedly.
Yes, allegedly. See a double underhook suplex delivered to Cactus Jack that sends him into the barbed wire ropes, then a hip toss to Jack onto an explosive. Somehow in all this, the announcers plugged Squared Circle Wrestling, which I think was just a random name, but little did they know about the actual Squared Circle Wrestling that is a school in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
By Rob Fuego.
I don't know if it was a random name. They seem to be actually plugging.
Maybe there was another one in Michigan.
They also mention how Guido says Terry Funk was wearing these striped pants, and Guido says that Terry Funk got them from the concentration camp in World War II.
Oh, Jesus.
But 3D corrects him, saying it was World War I. They also talk about how Terry Funk is a favorite among the women. They say the chicks love Terry Funk, and in Japan, he's a sex symbol.
Both men are bleeding at this point. And then Tiger Jeet Singh runs in, who went by the alias of Who the Fuck Is That? By the announcers. He runs in, uses the wrong side of the sword to stab Terry Funk, and then sends Funk into an exploding barbed wire board and then a neck breaker by Cactus for a two count. And then they do the countdown for the ring to explode, and instead we got a shitty set of fireworks where the fans are booing. The announcers call it technical difficulties. This sucked and was a big malfunction during this King of the Death match event.
Yeah, unfortunate, because it really...
The whole match was built around this.
I know, but that's...
The match, the ring is going to explode.
Yeah,
that was the draw for this.
It's unfortunate because they did so much work leading into it, and it shouldn't take away from any of the... It's so weird calling it work. It's these men falling into dynamite. But, this was a legendary match anyway.
Yeah. Both men, as I said, were bloody. Jack had, like, the complete crimson mask here. Like, this is a visual. Everyone's seen the still photo of him in the
book.
And, the sequence of him jumping off with the elbow off the ladder that you've seen on WWF programming before.
At one point, he puts his face against the mat and lifts it up, and, like, the thickness of the blood is, like, it's exactly the thickness of ketchup.
Yeah, it's, like, thick, like Great Muta used to get. And, as I mentioned, Cactus Jack hit an elbow off the ladder, got a two count. Then he climbs the ladder again. Funk gets up, tips the ladder, and Jack goes into the barbed wire ropes. But Funk is out from pushing this ladder over. Cactus recovers from the barbed wire spill, climbs over, and pins Terry Funk for the match, to win the match.
I didn't get this finish.
He's got a lot of heart.
Oh, shit!
He falls right onto the fucking barbed wire, slashing his big fat ass open.
But I think he's done. I think he hurt himself as well there, Guido. He's not moving too much. You see, he's bleeding from the head. This is what it all boils down to, is this main event. Cactus Jack still moving.
What's, like I said, a man of 123 can only last so long.
Two. Three.
No, he got him.
He got him with the three count. The winner of this fucking death match is Cactus Jack. I knew it all along. Oh, that's Terry Funk would run out of the field, and he has, and Cactus Jack is taking the victory.
Yeah, this was like, how is Terry out?
I don't know.
A weird finish to the King of the Death match, everybody, and that would wrap up the video, which was probably a good enough length. I think 90 minutes was a good time for this this event. I was entertained at times. I don't think this is a one-sitting style of video.
Yeah,
I think you have to watch it in chunks.
Well, obviously, unless, you know, this goes for people like you and I who aren't really Insane Clown Posse fans. If you're a fan of the Insane Clown Posse and a fan of the two personalities, then you probably love, you know, more than 90 minutes. But as a just speaking for myself and perhaps speaking for you too, John, if you're just a fan of wrestling, kind of unfamiliar with the Insane Clown Posse, it really is funny. Like, this type of review environment really is not the best place to talk about something like this. But like I said, when I first watched this like 10 years ago, I thought it was hilarious just to hear these two like make up shit on the spot, making up like names for these moves, like the uterus crunch and then explaining, like, you know, what crunching the uterus and, like, all just all that shit.
It's funny. Like, I'm sure anyone would have loved this if they had seen it at that time period. It was something so different. And myself, as I said, I'm not a big fan of death matches. I don't enjoy them that much. But I do have to say I really enjoyed when we got to chat with Violent J and just hearing the passion this guy has for wrestling. I mean, this is not someone that just simply, you know, wanted to make a quick buck off of wrestling. This is someone that has dedicated a huge part of his career to wrestling and someone that has been following wrestling since he was a kid. And the passion definitely comes through in that interview, which I think we will. Do you want to get to that right now?
Yeah.
All right.
I thought that was the segue, John.
I was just checking with you.
Yeah.
So here he is, everyone, chatting about JCW, Stranglemania, lots more here. Very interesting chat here with Violent J of the Insane Clown Posse.
We are joined right now by one member of the Insane Clown Posse, Violent J, and we're going to be chatting about a number of subjects, including their next internet pay-per-view, which is going to be Send In the Clowns, which is coming up June the 30th at psychopathiclive.com for the very affordable price of $5. It's a pleasure to welcome Violent J to the program, and how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing better than great, and I thank you guys for having me on the show. It means a lot.
Well, let's first chat about your guys' kind of foray into these internet pay-per-views. You guys have had quite a number under your belt already. Tell us a bit about the feedback you've gotten and kind of going the internet direction, which we've seen a lot of companies migrate to.
Yeah, you know, we've been having a lot of luck so far. We're doing pretty good, you know, and we're not one of these companies that's absolutely set in our ways. You know, we listen to what people say. We listen to critics and what they say, and we try to put on the better show, the better product. You know, we listen to people's complaints and where they think we could do better, you know, and we try to listen to that, and we try to do a better product, you know. But much to our surprise, we've been getting pretty good reviews, not only from our fans, from the Juggalos, who we know already love product, but from the wrestling press as well, you know, from the Dirt Sheets and everybody else. You know, we're really surprised because we've been getting a good bit of feedback, and it's all been pretty good, man.
Now, you mentioned the Juggalos, and I mean, that's one thing about you guys, is just the branding of the Insane Clown Posse. I mean, you guys have created a following for yourself, which I think is much more than just a audience. I mean, a rabid amount of followers. When you put ICP in that label attached to an event, it immediately brings in just a huge amount of people. And talk a bit about how you guys have created this enormous fan base that's followed you guys for the past 22 years.
Man, it's been a long road, you know. It's been a road, and Juggalos aren't—they're not your regular. You know, I don't even feel comfortable calling them fans because it seems to be so much more than that. It's a family atmosphere, you know. They're much more supportive than a fan would be, you know. Juggalos—it's almost a way of life in a positive way, you know. To be a Juggalo, I think. You know, most of all, Juggalos come from all walks of life. They're just, you know, hip-hop heads or metal heads or punk rockers or something like that. They're from all walks of life, but they all have something in common. And I think that what that is they're all sort of the underdog in some way. And what I mean by that is whether they don't follow the norm. You know, they're struggling or they're creative. They're doing their own thing or they're carving out their own niche. And that's what, to the best of my knowledge, that's what Juggalos have in common with each other, is that they're not sheep. They don't just follow with the masses. They kind of do their own thing, you know. And once they accept you, they support you, you know, extra strong, you know, whether it's music or an adventure. And Juggalos love to be around each other because there's something magical in common with Juggalos. And when they get together, whether it's for a wrestling show or for a concert, or sometimes Juggalos get together on their own, they have something called a mini gathering where they'll all meet in a park somewhere and they'll barbecue and they'll hang out just around each other, you know. And the feeling when there's a bunch of Juggalos together, the feeling they have around each other is almost supernatural, brother. Honestly, it feels so good. You know, and if you can put your finger on exactly what a Juggalo is and what they're there for and why Juggalos are attracted to each other, I think it would take some mysteriousness out of it. You know, it really can't be defined that easy. It can't be explained that easy, you know. But of course, there's a lot of Juggalos who aren't wrestling fans. And for those that are wrestling fans, our product, ACW, is just even more incredible to them. Because not only are they there because they share our music interest with us, but also they share a love for wrestling. And so to put those two together, it's an extra time. But JCW, first and foremost, is a company ran by wrestling fans. You know, and, we call ourselves Juggalo Championship Wrestling, but that's almost like Action Championship Wrestling or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have to be a Juggalo to be involved in what JCW is. I think Juggalo is more of a lot of people look at ACW and they think, well, I'm not a Juggalo, so I wouldn't understand that. That's not for me. I'm not a Juggalo. But, you know, I think if they knew more about what a Juggalo is, might be even more likely to be down with it, because a Juggalo is about everybody's included, nobody's excluded. You know, that's what a Juggalo is. Everybody's accepted. You know, nobody is rejected. You know, that's the number one system of what a Juggalo is, that everybody's included into it. You know, young and old, from the east side and the west side, you know, no matter who you are, what you're into, and where you're from, you know, everybody's accepted into the Juggalo world. That's the main beauty of it, you know. And I think people misunderstand the word Juggalo to begin with, and that's why a lot, you know, we find ourselves explaining what Juggalo is and what JCW is. But once you see the product, once you really dig into it, you know, yeah, there's some cuss words in our commentary and things like that, but that's the nature of the product. That doesn't have as much to do with being a Juggalo as it does, you know, we're more of an adult-themed wrestling show, you know. I don't want to say a bar league, but we're definitely an older, I don't know how to put it. We're definitely we're not so much a fan-friendly product. We're more for a bunch of guys to go out and go check out some wrestling, you know. There's definitely cuss words, but I think there's cuss words in every living room across the world when a bunch of buddies get together and watch wrestling, you know. And what CW is it doesn't filter any of that, you know. We're that promoted for a bunch of dudes and girls to get together and watch wrestling, you know, not filtered. We don't censor ourselves or anything like that. As it comes out naturally, that you get. And that's another thing about being a Juggalo is there's no censorship. There's no we're not hiding anything. We don't filter ourselves. We don't restrict ourselves. We're just, you get what you get, and it's as real as it could possibly be. And that's really the design of our product, you know. It's we don't go out of our way to have swing, or if there is no cussing in it, it's not like we go back and put cussing in it. It's what it is, how it comes out. It's what you get, you know. We don't follow any rules or regulations. It's all from art. It's all real, and it's from, you know. Even, you have to get too deep, but even being a clown in ICP, you know, that's what it's about. There's no show to it. It's you are what you are, you know. A clown is a clown, you know. We could slip on stage and bust our ass, and that's it. That's what we did. It's real, you know. We're not trying to be cool, or we're not trying to be hip or anything. We are what we are, and if others look at us as a clown, that's what we are then, you know. And all those elements into the big pot of what a Juggalo is and what JCW is, it all boils down to freedom. It's freedom to express, and that goes into music, that goes into JCW, and the bottom line is JCW is operated and ran by wrestling fans, people who love wrestling, you know? And you might like our music, you might like to come to our concerts, but the fact is JCW is a wrestling promotion ran by people who love wrestling. And we try to give people what they'd want to see as a wrestling fan, and that's really what we're about. You know?
I think that's pretty obvious, you know. Just no matter what people may feel about your music, seeing you guys have been outing in the wrestling industry, I think it's pretty obvious that you are a pretty big fan. When did that begin for you? At what age were you drawn first initially to pro wrestling?
You know, is right out of the strip, adolescent, straight up, you know, Potterville. As soon as we were 10, 11 years old and got a grasp of what wrestling was, I was hooked, you know. And even as an adult, I find wrestling fascinating, you know. And if you look at us musically, you can see our wrestling influences. I mean, you know, CP is off the get, you know. We paint our pieces, we go there, we have a story, a background, a character. And when we did our earlier interviews, they weren't interviews, those were promos we were cutting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you can see it in our band, you know, we almost feel, we all come across as wrestling characters or a persona or you know, something, a character that we created in our marketing, you know, that's really comes from wrestling, you know, and, I've always found it fascinating that, you could have an arena with 14,000 people in it and everybody in there knows that you're not seeing real competition, you know, as opposed to like, you know, a shoot fight or something like that. But everybody's okay with it. Everybody wants an escape from reality. They all want to boo the bad guy and cheer the good guy. You know what you're looking at? Maybe, you know, have a predetermined outcome and all that. Everybody wants to get behind it to escape reality, you know, and it just, and that's a lot like our music, you know. I know a lot of rappers always say, keep it real, you know, and, we don't believe in that with ICP. We believe in keep it entertaining, you know. We like to let our music take you away from the real. I think we all have to live in a real world. We all have to live, breathe, and die in a real world. We have to work in a real world. We have to do everything in a real world. I think our entertainment should take you out of that, take you somewhere else, and you get to escape the real world. And that's what we do with JCW as well, you know. We like to do things that take you from the real world every once in a while. You know, we don't get into, like, supernatural characters, or we don't have any aliens in our wrestling league or anything like that. But, you know, we definitely believe in make entertaining at any cost, you know, and we like to do, like I said, we do listen to critics and we do listen to people say, and we try to make a better product as far as the pay-per-views go, because when you're involving people paying, we want to give people what they want, you know. But at the same time, we like to you know, we like to do things our way. We like to do things restriction-free, you know. We know what we have. We know our audience. We know our product, and we know there's an audience for our product, and we try to do the best. We're not trying to be ECW. We're trying to be something brand new, you know. We don't have any chairs at our shows. It's standing room only. It's not like a concert, in the fact that, you know, when you go to a concert, you don't sit in a chair unless you're looking at something like classical or something, or maybe the Beach Boys or something. Nothing against the Beach Boys, but of the Beach Boys. You know, we have a concert barricade around the ring. You know, it's sitting room only. It's exciting. You're on your feet the whole time. We have our ring music really loud, you know. And when you come to the ring, the music is loud. We have a DJ that spins between the matches, you know. We have pretty girls come up the ring cards. They match one, match two. We just try to take everything in wrestling of today, and we kind of crank it up to a high volume, you know, and that's what we like to put out, you know. It's like I said, it's not your typical family product. A little bit more for a group of friends go out to hang for the day, maybe have some beers and watch some good wrestling, you know, and that's our niche. And we're definitely not trying to compete with anything out there. We're trying to offer our own product, you know, just like ICP. Just like we do in music, we're not trying to compete with anybody else, and we're definitely not trying to shove our product down anybody's throat, you know. As far as with Insane Clown Posse, you know, we never open for any other group. We always go on last because we know our music can be offensive, and we know that we're something different. Therefore, we never make you sit through our show while you're waiting to see your favorite band, you know. We always go on last. That way, after you've seen everybody else, you can leave if you don't want to see ICP, you know. And it's the same way with JCW, you know. We do our own thing, JCW, but I think we're overlooked a lot. I think we're misunderstood, you know. And I think if a lot of wrestling fans that have nothing to do with Juggaloism or ICP, I think if they actually gave it an honest shot, they might be surprised, because we spent a lot of time putting together really cool storylines and really cool characters, and believing, you know, we're fans of old school wrestling, like the 80s and early 90s, you know, when everybody had, I like the monsters of wrestling, like the Kamalas and the Berserker and George the Animal Steel, and we like to dabble into those kind of characters, and we like to do things that are really character driven, you know. That's really what we're about, you know. I'm just babbling, but
no, not all. It's
and yeah, that's really what we do, man. We're showmen, you know, we're very much showmen, and that's what we start off as. You know, wrestling of today likes to, companies like to put on like 5-star matches every match, and make the wrestling look more like MMA and this and that. You know, we just wrestling is its own thing. You know, it's not out in the carnival anyway. You know what I mean? And that's what we're keeping it in.
I want to talk about Stranglemania, the initial set of videotapes that really, I guess to a lot of people, put ICP on the wrestling map. How did you guys suddenly get the idea to comment over these Japanese tapes? When did you acquire these Japanese tapes? And can you just talk about the genesis of this idea?
Yeah, we, you know, I'm flipping, it's about 1994 or 95. You know, if you could think back to then, there, you know, this is before deathches were everywhere. This is before you had this America. You didn't have barbed wire, you know, thumbtacks. You didn't see that stuff back then, you know? And this was like when the ECW was just going, and it was really shocking to see that stuff. So I'm flipping a wrestling magazine, and I see this little ad, and little page ad, and it says, death wrestling from Japan, you know, and it says exploding rings, thumbtacks, barbed wire, broken glass. And I'm thinking, no way, this can't be real, you know? So we ordered all these tapes from Japan. I ordered probably 12 of them, and they came. And sure enough, everything they advertised was real. There was no commentary. It was just the matches. And then so we're sitting there in the studio, and one day, and we're showing everybody in the studio, and everybody's tripping out over the footage of what you're seeing. And we're kind of doing our own commentary, you know, making fun of it. We're laughing. We're like, any slams in the thumbtacks? And we're making names for the guys because we didn't know who these guys were, with the exception of, like, Terry Funk and Cat Jack and them. But we didn't know who any of the other guys were. So we're giving them their own names, and everybody else is laughing as we're doing it, you know. The idea just kind of sprang from that. We should do this, you know. We should put this out, not only because it's funny, us doing the commentary and names up for all these guys, but the footage itself is amazing, you know. Like, I don't think you could do a Stranglemania again in today's world because people have seen it all. We've had ideas, you know. There's some stuff going on in Japan that is really out there. Like, they've had, you know, sauna matches where they're wrestling in a sauna and they get in a hot tub and fight, you know. And then there's house matches where they construct a house on stage. They wrestle a guy in the bedroom, and then they wrestle another guy in the living room, and then the man comes by and they wrestle him, you know. You could possibly do a Stranglemania off of that stuff, but, you know, you can do it like we did it in 95 off Stranglemania, the original, because the footage itself was incredible. Exploding rings, barbed wire, thumbtacks. This is when that stuff was jaw-dropping. Nobody had seen that stuff before. Now, you can see in TNA when Abyss pulls out a bag of thumbtacks, and of course, Mick Foley, everything he's done, and, you know, you've seen it here. But at this time, back in the 90s and mid-90s, this is incredible, man. And we just got the idea, you know, after I ordered those videos, and sure enough, years later, when we went to WWE, and we met when we met Mick Foley, you know, he was, don't you guys have some money? he had a guy with him who said he owned all that footage that we used on Stranglemania, so I ended up having to pay him for it. And then we ended up paying Terry Funk for it, too, you know, and paying everybody. But it was well worth it, man. I mean, that Stranglemania video really put us on the map with wrestling fans, and I still hear about it a lot today, you know. A lot of people really loved it, had a great time watching it, and we actually came out with Stranglemania Volume 2, you know. And like I said, to come out with Volume 3, it just, you'd really need to, you know, like, I'd have to go to, like, you know, one of the companies that sell wrestling footage from all over the world, and I'd have to say, look, give me some really rare, crazy matches nobody's ever seen, you know, but gimmicks type of, you know, going out like the house matches or the sauna matches, or I believe there's even a desert match where they take two guys out in the desert and drop them off in the desert, and maybe possibly we could do a Stranglemania 3 using those kind of matches. But who knows if it would be as good as the original, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You really do get the sense, you know, like you mentioned, the idea came about when you and Shetty Dope were just watching, commentating to your friend. You really, just watching the videos, get that sense that you're in a room watching these tapes with your bees who are really funny, making fun of what's on the tapes. I'm just curious to know how long the actual recording process took, and whether or not anything was planned beforehand, or whether or not they just hit record and let you guys go.
You know, we did that in a matter of hours. We went in the studio, and I believe we wrote names down. We didn't know who was going to be who, but we wrote a bunch of names down in advance to look on a sheet, and when we see a guy come out, give him a name, you know? Unless it was like in the $25 Battle Royal, we kind of named them on names. But I think that's how some of the best stuff is made, and once again, it goes back to music, too. I think that's how some of the best product is made. The stuff that makes you and your friends laugh among yourselves in private, that's the best stuff. That's the realest stuff, you know? And in JCW day, the stuff when we're driving in a car going to wrestling somewhere and we're in a four-hour, six-hour ride, or we're in the tour bus from wrestling, the stuff we say would be awesome, that's the stuff that's gold right there. That's the stuff you do, you know, because you're hitting it right on the nail when you come up with those ideas, you know? Because there's so many other people that are just like you that would feel the same way. You know, so when we're doing JCW, we're coming up our storylines. We're like, may come from us taking a ride somewhere to see wrestling and everybody talking about wrestling, me and our friends. We're like, you know, cool. It's this in a storyline. A guy does this and then this happens. Or how about a wrestler who's like a mercenary? Like anybody can pay him and he'll go out there and triple anybody. Good guy, bad guy. And then you could have him, you know, work for a guy 1 week, and then next week his opponent pays him, and he goes out there and crits the guy he worked for last week. You know, it's cool ideas, and everybody's like, "Yeah, that would be awesome." You know, those are the ideas that work. You know, it's not like you need to get together around a big board table, come up with your ideas. Then, you know, it's the stuff you come up with from the heart that you just, you know, in the shit with your friends and coming up with stuff like that. That's the good stuff. You know, and that goes in music too. You know, I mean, like. Just think about what would be a cool song, you know, when you're with your friends and you're talking and everybody's laughing and you take those jokes and you put those into lyrics, you know, or you take little things about just like, you know, what made Stone Cold Stone Cold. When you're trying to do all these other characters, it's not going to work until he actually became a magnified version of himself. That worked, you know, same thing with Rock, you know, like. You try to be a bad guy or try to be a good guy, but it's only going to get you so far. But when you take what's real and what comes natural and you use that as your formula and build off that, that's what's going to work. Because just like you have friends in your life, people like to be around you. The reason they like to be around you, because they like personality. So take that personality, put that out there, and you're going to find other people watching on TV are going to like too. You know, and they're going to feel attracted to you because it's coming from a real basis, you know what I'm saying? And that's really what Stranglemania was, something we did on our own. It was funny. And we thought, man, put this just like this out on a VHS and put it everywhere. It'll make people laugh all over the world, and that's what it did, you know?
Yeah, you guys really achieved it with that. And a question I've always had for you was, I'm sure you've had a chance to watch this show. When Spike TV came with Most Stream Elimination, I mean, this was just simply buying a bunch of stock tape from Japan, putting commentary over it, and it became a huge success. I'm watching that. I mean, did you ever think, man, we could make this really viable of just getting these old wrestling matches and kind of doing the same? Because they hit a huge success. This was one of Spike's shows that kind of connected with their audience back in 2003.
Right. I feel they might have been influenced Stranglemania even.
I wouldn't doubt it. They seem to be wrestling fans watching those. Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. I feel like they kind of might have watched Romania. I felt that right when I first seen it, you know? I felt like they might have, you know, I'm not one of those guys that say everybody stole our ideas or anything like that, but it's possible that they might have been influenced by what we did, you know? And they had some kind of silly commentary like we did, you know what I mean? And it's all good, though. I mean, if they did get influenced by us, that's even better. That's great, you know?
Now, just going back to one of your previous answers and talking about build character, whether it be music or wrestling, I think the two are very, very similar when you're presenting characters to try and, you know, attach to gain a fall. Is in a recent interview, you were talking about kind of the mystique, you know, of keeping the wrestlers backstage and presenting them as stars. Something that I think, you know, a generation is coming up that I think sometimes they don't understand that. Asset of the industry right now of, you know, not seeing the band before they perform on stage, just seeing out at, you know, buying a Coke with the fans or something like that. I wanted to talk to you just a bit about a presenting guys like stars so the audience views them as such.
Right. You know, it goes everywhere. It goes for everything, wrestling and music, you know. Who are the fans getting, you know, sometimes the bands that used to put flyers out that says support your local music, you know, I mean, that's cool, but, you know, if you advertise yourself as a local band and you're asking for support and you're up on stage saying, hey, we have t-shirts for sale, you know, you're going to get some people over there that are like, oh, I like those guys. Let me help them out, you know. But then if you present yourself as a star, you're going to be looked at as a star, you know. If you're the guy walking around drinking beers with the audience, you know, they might at first say, hey, man, you were pretty good up there. Then they see you as one of them, just the guy out there chilling. But if you're the guy that stays backstage the whole night, you know what I mean? Those are the guys with the mystique. Those are the guys that they seem as the veterans. You know what I mean? Like those, you'd never see Ric Flair out in the crowd. You know what I mean? You'd never see anybody with any kind of name out in the crowd like that. They were down low with a hood on, hiding. You know what I mean? But, you know, it just goes to show. I mean, it's like if you're out there looking for attention, that's exactly what you're doing. People know that, you know? But if you carry yourself as more like, you know, you want to have a mystique about you. You want to be a bigger star. hey, man, you have to just give it up. You have to not be out there signing those autographs. I know you want to. I know you want to be exciting and be excited by people asking you for your autograph and everything. But if you want to really make a difference, you don't say support your local band. You go up there and you act like a national band. You know what I mean? And then you disappear after you're done playing. And enough of that, people really want to know who you are, really want to see you. And then they buy your t-shirts as a fan, not as like a guy trying to help a guy out, you know? I've never been cool with the idea of wrestlers going out there, selling their own gimmick, and got the purse on the side, they got the change purse on the side of their hip, and they're actually pulling the change out and giving a guy the change back. It's like, come on, seriously, man? You know, it's like you're almost selling those shirts out of pity. You know, like somebody's doing it to help you. You know they're giving you gas money to get to the next town or whatever. It just, they're not going to leave them with a star reputation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not going to have that in their head. You know, they're going to look like they helped you. They're going to almost look down on you. Not look down on you, but they're not going to look up on you, that's for sure. You know what I mean? You have to at least bring somebody else, have your girlfriend or somebody sell your stuff for you so you don't have to be out there peddling it yourself, you know? I just think that's just a sacrifice people have to make early on, you know? Do you want to just go out there and get those pops for it? It's sort of like, let's say you're at Artie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say two wrestlers. One wrestler gets there right when the party starts and he's hanging out. Everybody's like, oh, cool, such and such is here, you know? An hour later at the party, they're on to other subject, and you're still there. You know what I mean? And then 2 hours later, you're even a big deal no more. You're just there at the party. Everybody else, big deal. You're even a star in their eyes. You're just there, you know? But that other wrestler shows up 5 minutes at the end of the party. When he shows up, he's going to have the biggest circle all around him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the guy who's there at the party all night, he's going to be hit with all the questions of where's this such, when's he coming down, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's gonna say, man, where, blah blah blah, you know. Like, let's say me and Shaggy did something like that, you know, and Shaggy goes down to the party and I stay backstage, you know. At first everybody's gonna be like, oh, Shaggy, what's up, man, you know. An hour later they're gonna be like, where's Von and Jay, you know what I mean? And you know, and then if I stay hidden all night, and then I finally come in there at the end of the party for 10 minutes, I'm gonna have a big circle around me. You know what I mean? And then I leave like that, mysterious, mystique, you know. But he kind of played himself. You know, we don't do. I'm not picking on Shaggy at all. I'm trying to think of a bad example. You know what I mean? But anybody that does that, that goes down there, and you know what I'm saying, you just take the mystique away from yourself. You know, you're not. You gotta just say, you gotta just chalk it up and not do that, man. If you're making less money, even if you're not selling as many t-shirts, you gotta do that to build yourself as a character and be taken seriously, you know? You can't be seen giving some little kid change, man. It just doesn't work to me, man. It's not a good thing, man.
So how do you handle it in JCW? Do you guys have gimmick tables at all, or do you just, is that difficult telling the talent, listen, we don't want you guys out there with the public. You got to find somebody else to peddle your stuff out there. I mean, how do you guys handle it?
We don't even have gimmick tables.
Oh,
actually,
really?
with JCW, you know, we do the merch for them. You know, we sell merch. We produce merch for our top stars anyway. Like, you know, we do really good in the merch world, you know. And we sell merch for our artists, and we give them their money at the end of the night, or the next time we see them, we give them their money that they made at the last show. But we have somebody out there selling their merch. You know, like if you come to a JCW show, you'll see a Madman Pondo, a Necro t-shirt. You'll see, you know, a Rhino t-shirt. You'll see a Corporal Robinson t-shirt, a Too Tough Tony t-shirt, you know, a Zach Gowen t-shirt. You know, most of our aces have merch, even a couple of our heels have merch, you know. And what they sell, we pay them the next show later that night. It's still there, you know, when everything's down and everything. But yeah, we just don't have the gimmick tables out there like that. No, if they want to sell gimmicks, they can, but they themselves can't go do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree with the philosophy, and people I think are completely foreign to this idea. And there's other people who understand perfectly what you're saying. That's something that sometimes is lost, especially at you know, outside of, like, there's a reason people look at talent in WWE as stars, whether they, you know, are top of the card or even bottom of the card. It's building that mystique that I think is very essential. And before we wrap up, Jay, I want to get into, we had some listeners send in questions, and I just wanted to fire a few at you here. Jordan Fillmore wrote in, and he wanted to know what it was like when you guys were first forming JCW, and how you guys kept it alive in the early days and trying to get JCW up and off the ground.
You know, when we first did our very first wrestling show, when ICP first put on our first wrestling show, we actually called it Stranglemania Live. And we had matches in the whole card. And it was at a place called St. Andrews Hall in Detroit, and it sold out, and it was packed. And in the main event, it was me and Shaggy in a steel cage match versus the Hillbillies, these two Hillbilly guys. And the first card was incredible, you know. And that was in 97 or something. And then after that, we ran a show under the name Hellfire Wrestling with a guy named Dan Curtis as our booker. And he passed away about a week after that show, so that really kind of blew us out. And then after that, JCW was born, and we just said, this is it. We're going to be running shows. This is working. You know, Juggalo Champion. At first, it was called Juggalo Champion Shit Wrestling. And we didn't take it serious. It was mostly every match was outrageous. You know, we had people from our record label wrestling. Like, we had King Kong Bundy versus a guy named Tom Dubb, who worked at our wrestling, our record label, and he wasn't really a wrestler. Juggalos knew who he was, but he was like a 160-pound dude, and so we thought it'd be funny to stick him in the ring with King Kong Bundy, you know what I mean, and things like that. But more started to run JCW, the more we got serious with it. We dropped the shit and turned it to championship. We had real belts made, and started getting real serious, and we realized this is something we're going to do for a long time. We're going to do this forever, you know. As long as there's an ICP, there's going to be a JCW. And basically, in just the last, probably just the last year or two, we decided to really step up and let JCW run full time. So now we've got people operating it, like Corporal Robinson and Kevin Hill. These guys are doing booking and got people working on website and everything. So that when ICP drops an album and we go do our thing musically, JCW will continue to grow and continue to do shows all year round, you know. And we just recently decided to do it full time, you know, and to totally keep it running all year round. And we're going to tour the country at least once a year, maybe twice a year. And we're just going to really take it serious because we love doing it. It's like an escape. It's like, it just is awesome. It gives Juggalos another reason to get together and be together. And it gives Juggalos more Juggalo heroes in the wrestlers. They can look up and everything. And it's just cool. We can do storylines. And it just is such a wonderful, wonderful way. You know, it's been there since I was a little kid, and me and Shaggy both love it because it links us directly to our childhood, and it's something that's always been there. We used to run backyard wrestling back in the day, you know. Of course, we got really serious with our backyard wrestling too, but something always done. And so to do it at this age and to do it like this, it's just a dream come true, and it just is a direct link to our childhood, and it comforts us. The only word I can use is comforting. You know, it's always been there from day one, and to be able to do it keeps us grounded. It's like anchor. It keeps us so we don't float off into space. You know, it's right there. Always been the way it's always been, and we love it.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Beard has a question, and he wants to ask, what was your experience with WCW like? Nate Milton has a follow-up question asking about how much input you had with your storylines involving the Dark Carnival with Piro and the Kiss Demon, Great Mood.
Man, you know, in WCW, our experiences were great. Fantastic, man. We had a blast in WCW. You know, you're talking about we were wrestling Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, you know. We were teaming with Muda, you know. It was just great. Vampiro was just so much fun, man. And the freedom, you know, we had a lot of creative. They asked us what we wanted to do, what we wanted to be called. They asked us, you know, like they asked us to make a song for our ring entrance. At least to let us come down there. And our entrance was 3 minutes long. You know what I mean? Because they wanted the entire song to play, because at the time they were selling the WCW Mayhem CD.
Yeah.
So they wanted the entire intro play, you know. And that gave us a chance to get our time coming down the ring and to have our whole intro. And, you know, and I was watching some YouTube stuff the other day, man. And we had a blast, man. I mean, you know, we got to do some interaction with Goldberg, you know. I mean, just back to talk Sting and Hulk Hogan and everybody, man, it was just phenomenal, man. WCW, I'd say, was three times the experience WWE was.
How would you compare in terms of, because you guys worked obviously on the Mayhem CD, but also you guys had a track on the WWF Volume 3 music CD as well. Did you guys kind of have like a back end of each CD? Because particularly the WWF CD, I mean, that was kind of the one of the major tracks on there for you guys with the Oddities theme.
Yeah, that did real good. You know, we got a platinum plaque of that hanging in office, you know. That's what really got us into wrestling. They contacted us about doing that song, and we told them we were wrestlers. We actually sent them the DVD from Stranglemania Live for my steel cage match. And next thing you know, they have in Connecticut or wherever it is, and we were in the WWE headquarters, the Stanford headquarters, wrestling with Bruce Pritt and somebody else. And we were, you know, they were videotaping it for Vince McMahon, and that's how we ended up getting there. It was all through that song, you know. They asked us to make that song for the Oddities. We told them, hey, man, wrestlers, you know, we were wrestlers before we made music. And so it all just worked out, you know. But, and we got, and then in the WWE, we got to wrestle with the Road Warriors, you know, never in a two-on-two match, but we got to interact with them, you know, do some fight with them and stuff. Man, just, you know, we grew up the biggest fans you could be, man. To be able to do that stuff was just incredible, man. And we know it wasn't our wrestling skill that got us the big two. It was, you know, it wasn't because we were so hot on the independents, you know, or anything like that. It was definitely music that got us there. But we'll take it any way we get it. And I'm sure any other fan of wrestling, is a fan as big as we were of it, would do the same thing, man. We debuted in WWE at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
At SummerSlam, I mean, come on, just imagine, you know, being asked to do that, you know. And when we got there, you know, we needed a dressing room that we could paint our faces. And they stuck us in their dressing room with Steve Austin and Undertaker going over their main event. It was four people in that room. It was me and Shaggy, and sitting directly behind us on the bench was Undertaker and Steve Austin. I mean, this is our first time WWE at Madison Square Garden. Can you imagine? As we're sitting there listening to them, the spots, it's like, ah, man, it was just beyond a dream come true. It was a fantasy come true, man.
And that leads to Mark Cardoso's question, who wanted to know what it was like getting to hang out with Giant Silva, and your overall thoughts of the Oddities when they paired you guys with those guys.
You know, it was cool. You know what I mean? It was cool. You know, I've always been fascinated by Giants, so hanging out with Giant Silva was awesome, you know, with his catcher mitt hands. And it was so funny because he had such a little, tiny, fragile wife. And I bet you he just put it to her at night. But, man, his wife was small and fragile. But, yeah, it was great, you know. And then Earthquake was under the Golga thing. That was great, you know. And it was just all great. It was all great, you know. And even the Headbangers was cool. You know, we got Headbangers coming into Bloody Mania this year to our Legends Wrestling Show at the Gathering this year, you know. And it just was, you know, working with the Oddities was great, you know. And I was looking at that on YouTube, you know, and the little vignettes we did. And, man, we made the cover of the WWE magazine with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, headline on the cover, the WWF magazine said, "Send out the clowns." You know, that was the cover. Mm-hmm. Come on, I got that shit framed forever, man.
Brian Porter wants to know, will we ever see the return of your early 90s in personas of Heck Hatchet and the Super Dweller? Perhaps a DVD of a comp of these early Malcolm Monroe shows?
I don't know. I'm sure you'll see some of it on something. I do want to do a documentary about our wrestling career, and I'm sure there'll be a couple matches in the bonus section. You know what I'm saying? Showing the early match, Hector Hatchet versus Uwadwa, with our manager Billy out there as Brick. You know, I'm sure they'll make a way to DVD one day as maybe bonus material or something, but we'll probably do a documentary one day that chronicles all of our wrestling career and what we did with it, you know, and how lucky. It won't be about how impressive it was. It'll be about how fortunate we were, you know, to be able to do that stuff. But, I believe sometime in our long life it'll make DVD and be released. Yeah, I'd say yeah.
And we've got two more here. Snorri wants to know if you're still following the product in WWE and TNA, and also if you ever have a concert in Iceland, which is where Snorri is from.
Yes, we will have a concert in Iceland. Absolutely. And, yes, I follow WWE and TNA religiously. I love Mondays and Thursday nights. Hell yeah. And I love it. Man, WWE is, you know, you can say what you want about it, but that's where everybody's watching on Monday nights. WWE is devastating, man. They are the best. They're the way they light the crowd, blue on SmackDown, red on Raw, just the production, how large it is and how big it is. And, you know, Undertaker versus Triple H at Mania last year, and just the way they, when they really want to pull it out, they pull it out, man. They're always searching for that new. They're always searching for that next star, and they're trying to make tomorrow's news. But, you know, every once in a while, when they want to, they will school you. The only thing was, they waited too damn long about Macho Man back, and I know they regret it. And I just really wanted to see Macho Man do one more something in WWE, you know. And, yeah, I'm bummed out about that. I feel like they, whatever grudge there was there between Vince and Macho Man, it just went too far, man, and it's a shame. But I love WWE, man, and I love TNA, too. I love watching TNA. Those guys, they want their break. Those guys work hard. They work hard as hell, man. Plus, I think TNA's got hotter chicks than WWE. I don't know, Bella, man, Bella's, man. But TNA's got a lot of hot chicks, man. So, I don't know. I love the chicks in both of them, you know, so hard to say. But hell yeah, they're every, and I always see the hatchet signs. And if people don't see him in wrestling, they're blind, man. Because every other week, at least, you'll see a hatchet sign. And it's been that way for the past 15 years about. Mm. Hatchets in the crowd. Every other week, at least, you'll see them. Sometimes they're so beautifully placed. Like Ray Rogan does his pose right under his Odyssey, a fat-ass hatchet sign. Love it, man. Think about that for a minute. How incredible is a juggalo to sit at home, draw up a big-ass hatchet man with markers, color all in, get all the way to wrestling and hold it up just so all juggalos see it on TV. That is what real dedication is about, man. That's why juggalos rule, man. One juggalo equals to 1,000 regular fans or more, better.
It absolutely is quite the cool thing to know, to see something, a sign presented on a national TV. And our final
and
question...
So often, you know, and I wish there could be a documentary highlighting all the best placed Hatchet Man signs on wrestling. Because, man, there's even one in the intro of Raw. I noticed it every week.
Oh.
There's a Hatchet Man sign that made it into the intro of Raw. I love it, man.
That's fantastic. Our final question comes from Sergey Gavyuk, and he wants to ask, what industry has more politics and backstabbing, music or pro wrestling?
Wow. Damn, great question. Yeah, I'd probably go and say more backstabbing. Probably it's not that equal. You know, it just bothers me that wrestlers, there's no retirement plan. There's no,
yeah.
Too many wrestlers are broke. You know, it just sucks. But, you know, I'll go ahead and say it's harder than wrestling. You know, there's more people jarring for position. And on a wrestling show, you only get 5 or 10 minutes. At a concert, that's your concert. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, you know, I would say the way wrestling is structured, you're more... Yeah, definitely, because music has publishing. You know, we're still getting checks for songs we released, you know, 15 years ago. You know what I mean? So in music, you know, ways you can set yourself up and make sure you're straight for life. Plus, your fans are you know, I think you're a little safer in music as far as your career. But in wrestling, you know, it's like too many legends are broke, man. It makes me sick, man. They deserve better. There should be a union. You know, there's a union in music, sort of. I'd say wrestling's probably a little bit harder.
Yeah. Well, we'll end off here, Jay. I want to really thank you for all this time you've given us. Send in the Clowns is coming up June the 30th. It's only $5, available at PicklePackLive.com, and you can also go to JoeWrestling.com. It kicks off at 8 o'clock. You guys are doing a live chat on the website at 7:30 that you should check out. And quickly, Jay, if you want to give us a quick plug, for those maybe not familiar, the gathering, you guys are going to be holding your annual gathering in August. For those that are unfamiliar, there is absolutely nothing like this event in wrestling.
It's hands down. We're going to have four wrestling shows. Two shows are called Eyeball Wrestling, and they feature death matches. You know, the best in deathmatch wrestling, the best in deathmatch competitors from everywhere. And then on Friday night, we have the hands down the greatest Legends of Wrestling show anywhere in the world. I believe it's the best show in the world. We've got endless amount of names from Funk to Piper to Bob Backlund to the Headbangers to... You go on and on and on and on and on. And then Saturday night is Bloody Mania 5, and we've got, you know, the best of JCW action, all the feuds and storylines come to a head at Bloody Mania, plus a lot of great stars coming out to that, too. If you go to the JCW.com, if you go to JuggaloWrestling.com, it'll list everybody that's at the gathering, and there's so many more wrestlers still to be announced, so many incredible names. When it's all said and done, if you check out JuggaloWrestling.com before the gathering on August 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, you will not believe the list of names coming. It's easily the biggest independent show anywhere in the world. We believe it is. And hands down, it's just, and especially like the wrestling show we're having, it's going down, brother.
Is Tequila coming back this
year? She's invited.
was that like the best publicity possible for you guys last year, or did you guys look at that as bad publicity? Because, man, everyone covered that story.
That was great, but brother, take it from me. Wait till you see what happens this year.
Awesome. What a tease. True promoter. Hey, I want to thank you very much for this time. Once again, JuggaloWrestling.com and PsychopathicLive.com. Thanks a lot for the time, man. We really appreciate this.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you having me on the show, and much fond love. Woo-woo.
So what did you feel about that interview, eh?
I really enjoyed it. I
did as well.
I think everybody, you know, has a preconceived conception of what these people are like I, it sounds so rude.
They buy into the characters that they portray.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's, you know, like rude, crass people. But like when you talk to him, and like he's an extremely intelligent person, and I'm sure by now a millionaire with all the merchandising that
the branding those guys have done, it's incredible.
Yes, yes.
Like ICP puts their name on something, you've got an audience. That's incredible.
And not to sound full of myself or anything, but like the way he was talking about some of the concepts behind, you know, just having an idea and pushing it out to the audience, it really reminds me of this podcast and how, you know, really it's just the ideas from you and myself. We think of it and then you get it out there without really any filter. And that's often the best type of stuff.
I completely agree. So, of course, they were promoting their event. It's coming up June 30th. Send in the clowns that you can watch online at psychopathiclive.com. So right now we'll get into your feedback to Stranglemania. We'll start off, Carlo Rossi. I watched 5 minutes of it, and I wanted to hurl. Worst commentary ever. I would rather listen to 4 Michael Coles while watching Superstars and NXT. I will disagree. I found, you know, it's one of those things I always find with commentary, especially something like this where it's very comedy-based. It's extremely difficult to hold that up past 5 minutes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I thought these guys were on for 90 minutes, and whether they did it in chunks or not or did it all at once, I was impressed that these guys could go at that pace, and you could tell they were wrestling fans, and you brought it up very, very well with Violent J, especially amping up the overt cliches that any wrestling fan is going to latch onto.
Patrick Harrington, this show was aimed to juggalos, so of course smart marks like us wouldn't think this was funny. But ICP to this day, one of their main attractions is Bloody Mania matches every year at the Gathering of the Juggalos, which feature wrestling legends as well as stand-up comedy with WWE legends like Roddy Piper.
It's such a weird list that they get every year for the Gathering. Like, as he mentioned, Bob Backlund is going to be at the Gathering this August. It's just like putting these weird personalities into this setting. That alone is interesting in and of itself. Tony Sakic, I think it's important.
The person who originally requested this review
was Patrick. Oh, really?
Tony
Sakic. I think that it's important to notice that this came out in 97, which really was months before they got huge on a nationwide basis. They really weren't juggalos like there are now. This was just them being ridiculous and providing commentary for matches that had none and selling it to local fans, and it worked greatly for me. Watching it now, it can never have the same impact it did upon first viewing, which kind of sucks. It does remind me of how many people locally loved ICP before they even had any kind of national stage at all. The idea of two people just cursing a lot and making fun of everything about wrestling was really brand new, almost like Mystery Science Theater, but in a completely opposite manner. I love this video, and it really reminds me of a good chunk of my life that was super fun and super unique as a wrestling fan first. Their attitude of literally not caring about what they did just made them so much cooler and rebellious than ECW could ever be. I mean, Tony brings up a really good point about, you know, a lot of things that just catch on. It's just presenting something that's fun. I mean, you're not going to watch Stranglemania the same way you're going to watch, you know, a typical wrestling show.
An ROH show.
If people enjoy it and have fun, that's all it's meant to be. You know what I mean? And that sometimes that in and of itself is a goal.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some Beyond the Mat feedback first from Ahmad. But I really enjoyed your guys' review of and interviews relating to Beyond the Mat. Roland came off like the guy who says everything is cool or fine, but just continues to complain about how everything isn't fine. I just recently watched Bloodstained Memoirs featuring Piper, Ultimo Dragon, and others. Maybe you guys could review that one day. Continuing on this beat, I just realized how great a television show about a pro wrestler could be. I'm talking about a show in the style of Lights Out on a network like HBO, Showtime, or AMC. The life of an independent worker trying to get to the big time and all the shark-infested waters along the way. Many times behind the scenes and road stories are far more interesting than the matches on TV.
I know for a fact that HBO at one point had an idea in development right after The Wrestler to try and do something like that, of going back to following a territory in like the 70s or something like that, but it just never got off the ground because I can only imagine how many pitches there have been to try and do a wrestling style drama, but it's a tough sell for a lot of people. Richard St. H., listen to your podcast concerning Beyond the Mat. I saw the movie the first weekend it came out in my area, and I believe they had a Q&A session after the first night. As a moviegoer, Beyond the Mat deserved all the accolades that The Wrestler got. In fact, The Wrestler breaks kayfabe unnecessarily by revealing how people blade and all the steroids that should disappear. I would like for you two to review The Wrestler.
Someday, maybe. James Starkey. I couldn't find it in my heart to sit down and watch Stranglemania, but I'm looking forward to the review. I love Beyond the Mat and really enjoyed both interviews you guys did. The bit that always stuck with me was Vince's obsession with Draws puking. At first, I thought Vince was playing for the camera, but now I know he's exactly like that. Especially after listening to Lagana's excellent I Want Wrestling Creative podcast and hearing how bizarre some of the stories of ex-creative team members have about Vince, like him being obsessed with the writer who had a fake eye he could remove. I think I'm going to take John's lead and show it to my girlfriend. I think she'll like it a lot more than when I forced her to go to TNA Genesis earlier this year.
Ooh.
It was a no-win situation.
And do we have that the feedback from Mr. Alexander? That will end us off here.
You want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay. This comes to us from Roland Alexander. Of course, you could check out the interview from this past week's review of Raw. And he actually commented on John Pollock's Facebook wall, saying, I want to thank Waiting and John for the opportunity to come on their wrestling show and discuss Beyond the Mat and the sacrifices young guys and girls make to pursue their dream in pro wrestling. I've been wanting to do this since the release, and I was able to get a lot off my chest. I didn't want to approach anyone, so I figured I'd wait, and it was a long wait, and I'm curious how others feel. Was I meant to look bad by the producer, Barry Blaustein? If so, do you think he innocently didn't know I came off bad, or was he the one that was dishonest? I know there is something I never shared during the interview, but I will do so now. On the night he shot Gym Wars, Barry and his production crew had put all of their equipment away. Barry told me from the beginning to not play to the cameras and be honest and don't create my own show. We shot an angle that was very believable because I used lots of stuff that was true and only Barry Blaustein and David Meltzer knew about. They went scrambling for their production equipment and cameras because it involved myself and Vic Grimes, and Barry and David knew there was friction between Vic and I, but he never knew Vic and I had made up. I told Michael Modest to get in the middle of both of us and to take both sides and agree with what Vic was saying and agree with what I was saying. The fans, who were already somewhat smart in 97, were so pissed at me they pissed on the building on the way out as they felt it was real and I was banning Vic from APW. To David Meltzer's credit, he thought it was a work because if it was real, I would have come off even worse than I did in the movie Beyond the Mat. The next day, Barry shot an interview, an hour's worth, with Dave Meltzer, and only 10 seconds showed up in the movie, the remainder on the cutting room floor. Barry asked me when he got there the next day if it was a work or a shoot, and he honestly thought it was a shoot, and I told him it was a work, and he wasn't too happy. The way he portrayed me in the film could have been payback for not being honest in the movie as he asked me to. He even said in the director's cut that he felt I was dishonest in the movie. No, Barry, I was doing my job as booker and promoter and trying to make believers out of the wrestling fans and make it entertaining. Entertaining it was. Again, Thanks to Live Audio Radio for the opportunity to air my opinion in the public forum and through pro wrestling media.
You must obey the law. So thank you to Roland for that that interesting backstory.
Thank
for,
you to Roland
about the filming going on. I really have enjoyed our coverage of Beyond the Mat and just getting to kind of ask some of the principal people involved, just some behind the scenes notes. Like, that's just a cool part of our job, is that something, you know, I watched when I was in, you know, 10th grade, and now getting a chance to actually be able to interview these people and ask questions I've always had. So
yeah,
I really have enjoyed that. You did a great job with Roland this week.
Oh, you did a great job as well, as always, John, with Barry and with everybody.
Oh, thanks, Way.
But like Roland says, he wants to know what you guys think. So do you think that he was intentionally made to look bad as payback for whatever this angle was, or do you think it was something else? Let us know. Reviewaway.com.
And that's going to bring us to an end of this week's show, everybody. We hope you enjoyed our review of Stranglemania. Next week, I thought we would take a look at an event from 2001 featuring a very hotly debated match, and that comes from the King of the Ring 2001, which also featured a match with glass. Shane McMahon against Kurt Angle, which people have debated for years about whether this is... Some people have called this one of the best matches ever, and other people hate this match. So I thought it could generate some interesting discussion, because that's a match lots of people talk about all the time. And it's June, so let's do a King of the Ring one. Let's 10 years ago that event took place.
Wow.
That's nuts.
I am old.
I'm old as well, Wei. So we will review King of the Ring next week, 2001, just as the invasion was beginning.
Oh, man. What else is on that show?
Yeah. We've also got a three-way for the... We have Austin, Benoit, and Jericho, one of the worst promoted main events in WWE history, as I recall. The tournament.
Yeah, with Brock Lesnar, and I believe RVD was in there as well.
We get some fun with DDP.
Oh,
as the Stalker.
Right. Yeah.
Seems like a great show to review.
Oh, man.
So we will take a look at that next week. As always, everybody... please join our group, spread the word at reviewaway.com, and you can get all your news every day at liveaudiowrestling.com. A big thank you to all the people who responded this week for helping us to transcribe some of these interviews and get the word out more. I can't thank you guys enough. We got a tremendous response, and I appreciate all of you guys. If I have not got back to you, don't worry. I have your names and your messages, and we'll get back to you when we have interviews that need to be transcribed.
Yeah, and before you guys tear me a new asshole, RVD and Brock were on next year's King of the Ring, not 2001.
That's right. Yes, it was 2002.
Yes.
So that will put us to an end, everyone. We're back on Tuesday with Review or Raw, Friday with Review and Impact. And Mr. Ting, why don't you close us out with a tune?
Well, what other group can we go out with but ICP for this show? And so why not an Insane Clown Posse song that was promoted on this show? What was it called? Chicken Heads?
Chicken something.
Let's do this over.
No, there are no redos in life.
Chicken Hunting. Chicken Hunting. There we go, by the Insane Clown Posse
off Riddle Box.
People are either gonna love this show or fucking
I think so. They're gonna